You're listening to Money Never Sleeps Radio. In your face.
What we got here is a failure to communicate.
Oh, have I got your attention now?
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
You know what I mean?
Money to be made in a place like this.
Money never sleeps, pal.
You're crazy. Don't run when you lose. Don't whine when it hurts.
You know what it takes to sell real estate?
It takes brass.
I'm falling, and I can't get up.
All right, welcome to Money Never Sleeps. This is a show where we talk about anything and everything that impacts the flow of money from around the corner to around the world. And today, you know, on this show, on this episode, I'm going to talk about the economy. I'm far from an economist, right? But I just think that, you know, understanding certain parts of the, you know, what moves the machine and understanding it a little bit helps when you're trying to map things out or trying to figure things out or try to understand anything as far as the economy works. One of the big pushers of the economy is credit. And that's the reality of it. This is why I've said so many times that the private credit markets, they're just going to expand because those private credit markets actually have an impact on how these companies function and how they can function. And there's a trickle down across the board. I'm going to try to simplify this because I've simplified it for myself so that I can kind of understand it. When you have a credit, it's like if you're buying something in a store, right? You go and you buy something on credit. You're not using cash to do that. You know, cash is a settlement. That's an instant settlement between two parties. So that's the end of the transaction. When you have a credit, you have an open transaction. So if I was buying something on credit, I'm creating a liability where the merchant is actually gaining an asset, right? Because now they have it. They're owed the money. So that's how that works, right? If I fail to pay that back, that merchant, that asset goes away. And that can be a problem. So think about that on a massive scale of how that can, you know, impact things. I mean, just look at 2008. It impacts everything. Okay, you look at 1929. You look at anywhere throughout history. Go back in time. Go back to Babylon, the Medici era. Go back to Amsterdam. Go back to these times. You'll see how the story never changes. The only thing that changes is the location, the monetary instrument, and, you know, basically the players involved. And that's the reality of it. When you're talking about credit, credit moves the economy, all right? When you have credit, people are spending more, right? They are actually going and they're saying, okay, I don't have all this money to buy a car, buy a house, or buy something, but I can get credit to do so, and then I'll pay it back later. Which means that at a future date, that individual, you know, will wind up spending less so they can pay down the loan. All right, so there's a cycle involved here. And without that credit, that person wouldn't be able to buy that car, that house, or whatever that product is. Now, when someone is buying something, okay, someone else is gaining, all right? So you're spending, someone else is gaining. That's their income. And as they spend, it becomes income for another company, another group. And it goes, you know, their employees and everything else. So if you are going and you're buying something, all right, that merchant is getting money from you, right? If it's a cash settlement, it's cash. They're getting something from you. That becomes income for them. Now they're able to go and hire their employees and pay their employees, and their employees can take care of their families. They can go, and you have that social and economic impact where they'll go and they'll shop and they have to buy food, clothes, you know, school supplies for the kids, blah, 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 gas, this, that, whatever, a rug for their room. Commerce continues. So this is a never-ending flow because every time you buy something, every time you spend somewhere, that's becoming somebody else's income. I spend, it becomes the other person's income, and then so on and so forth. Now, when the time comes that you're not spending, it becomes impactful on a massive degree. And I'm just going to go on one line, right? You stop spending. Well, you're spending. The merchant is getting income, and they're able to handle their obligations. You stop spending. The merchant is not getting income. They can't handle their obligations. They can't pay their employees. They can't hire more people, and that becomes impactful. These people can lose their jobs. Now they lose their jobs. What happens? They're not shopping in those areas. They're not buying homes, buying cars, buying a TV set, buying the school supplies, not buying those extra things that normally they would buy. They're not doing it because they can't. They can't afford it. So it becomes a big thing. This is why credit's so important. It allows someone to spend something that they don't have. Now, is it abused? No question is abused. That's why you have default all the time. But without that credit, the world would stop. It would stop. Because how are you moving things around? It's a little difficult. All right. This is why, you know, over time, you know, credit became the power when it comes to growth. It became a main catalyst. Okay, you probably have or have not heard the term that sometimes, you know, debt can be a strength to a company, right? Now, if a company has debt and they owe, they basically are getting some credit for something. It becomes their debt, their obligation becomes their liability. So they're able to go and do things within their company, right, to go function and, you know, hire people and do all that other fun stuff, you know. But anyway, so if you go and you take that and you look at that on a larger scale, you can see how this can be impactful, not only for individuals but for businesses, for countries. When a country defaults, what happens? Their currency gets devalued. A whole bunch of bad things happen. This is why a creditor, especially on a big scale, you know, if you have a company that borrowed, you know, $100 million to do XYZ and they can't pay them back, the creditor does not want to write that off and take the loss because that's an asset on their books. They remove that, they have no more asset. And their company gets reduced by $100 million, and that's bad. So they'll wind up going and they'll restructure the loan, have a longer payout period, and all this other stuff that they'll do to keep that loan alive. As long as the loan's alive, the company doesn't really want to default, but they can't afford it. So it gets worked out. Same thing works out with the IMF when they're going and they're lending money to a country. And that's a whole completely different story because of the things that happen there. You know, but they'll go lend money to a country, to a developing nation. They'll go do that. If they can't pay it, it has to get restructured. It has to, because you can't default. All right, now, if you're talking about it on a country level, I'm sure that there's certain things in place that, you know, they have some guarantees, you know, with things, mining and other natural resources and whatever else is going on there. But that's a bigger story, right? I just want to, you know, stick to what I was originally speaking about as far as, you know, the economy and credit and how that helps. Because without the credit, you know, if you're getting, I'm going to give you just an arbitrary number. Let's say you're making $100 a week, right? But you want to go buy something. Maybe your bills equate to $50 a week. If you're in New York, you're in debt already. So, but we'll just go with $50 a week, and you want to go buy something that costs $100. You don't have the money, right? You know you're going to have it in the future because you have a job, you're getting income and everything. But what do? Well, you get a credit card, you go to get a store credit, whatever you're going to do, you go and you get credit to go buy this thing. Now you have it. Now you're happy. Now you're paying it out. The credit card company, they'll get a high interest rate, but they'll get their money back. And then this is how the cycle goes. Now, if you didn't have the ability to go and borrow to buy that thing probably wouldn't be sold, maybe to someone, but maybe not, right? And then it goes down to the thing that the merchant is not is not getting the income. It's not trickling down to their employees. It's not trickling down to wherever the employees live, and it impacts the government and everything else, and it becomes problematic. You know, you have the government when they're trying to keep things in place, they'll raise interest rates, right? Now, that's the easy way to go solve problems when you have, you know, inflation out of control. You're able to do that. But now, you know, when you don't have these tools in front of you, if you are at, like we were for a little while, we're at zero, right? So you're at zero. Your hands are tied. What do you do? You can't go negative. What are you going to, you know, the government's going to owe you something beyond that. You know, they're going to go negative. It can't happen. So, you know, what winds up happening there, you have a problem. And something, and this is why when you have economists that are talking about the Treasury, let's say, you hear a lot about, you know, with Trump saying, you know, telling Powell when he was when he was at the head of the Treasury, you know, at the Federal Reserve, not the Treasury, the Federal Reserve, and he wanted him to go and lower interest rates, but if the economy is not supporting it, how do you do that? You do that, you create a problem. See, the government and the Treasury and everything with the government, they can do only one thing. The Federal Reserve does another thing. Like a central bank does one thing, and the country, the government does another thing. The government can actually go and spend. They can spend, they can go and buy, they can go and distribute money to the people, and unemployment and welfare, and they can do that. But the one thing they can't do, they cannot issue money. That's the job that only a central bank can do. Come the Federal Reserve. Now, if the Federal Reserve, if they see a problem like they did in 08, they can go issue more money to go and resolve a problem. But at that point, they had interest rates at zero, so if things didn't turn the other way, it would have been an issue. But bear in mind, when that was happening and they had interest rates at zero, the banks were making money hand over fist. Reason being is that they're getting the money at zero. They're borrowing as much as they can because they're lending it to you at 3%, 4%, 5%. They got money for nothing. They got money for nothing. And they made off their consumers because the Federal Reserve said, do it, make it happen, stimulate the economy, and there you go. And it worked. It worked. But now we're in this situation that, you know, everything's in flux. You know, we have the war going on and all this stuff, and it's impactful to how the country is going to run. Now, I'm going way, way off the mark here, but it does fit into this whole conversation with the economy. You know, I'm putting this in simple form, but it's a little more complex. But at the end of the day, if you have a government that's spending too much and a central bank that's not going to issue enough to cover that, then you go into default. And the United States does not go into default. Other countries have. But the U.S., you know, you have too many things pegged to the U.S. dollar for that to transpire. And this is one of the reasons why we came up the gold standard. You know, the value of gold, you know, on the books of the U.S. government is under $40. You know, gold is over 4,000. So they, you know, the adjustment in price isn't there. But then again, you know, if you peg any currency to a commodity, let's say gold or something like that, you can only issue what you're allowed to issue. It increases that scope of default, because now if things go awry, if something goes wrong, or a war breaks out and you need to defend yourself, you know, and you say, well, I have $100 in gold, I can't issue any more than $100 worth. But you take the gold out of the equation, you can issue $1 million, you know, and this is why this transpired, you know, and this is the way the world goes around, you know. But going back to the private credit markets, when they issue credit to a company. These companies, they need the money to go grow and do the things they need to do. When they're getting the private credit, they're basically, I think they're at a they're at probably about 70% valuation of the company that they're able to go borrow, sometimes 60. So it's not crazy that the private credit issuer is going to be in dire straits, right? They make sure that you have these things in place. But now they're taking on a little riskier things with the data centers and everything because they're longer winded. However, still not a bad play, you know, because you hold the keys, you know, you have the credit. You know, this is how you had, you know, the Rothschilds when they were doing their thing and they became a global powerhouse during that time. Because what do? They lent money out. They became bankers. And the bankers are the ones that were running things. Even today, the bankers, you know, and bankers are different today. Okay, they're different than they were back in the 70s or 80s. Okay, it's a different animal, different game. And the Federal Reserve and the things that happened over the past 20 years made it what it is today, where you have investment banks, which are also bankers, which are the power players, the J.P. Morgans, the Goldman Sachs, the Morgan Stanleys, you know, the Credit Suisse, you know, they're the power players in the space, in the financial space, and this is where we're at here, you know. But the private credit players, they're necessary for these companies that aren't getting the loans from the banks that they need, because these are special situations they're involved with, so they have to actually depend on alternative means, and alternative means are private credit markets. So they're able to go and do that, and that helps stimulate that company, because now that company can go and make an acquisition, or they can go expand their business, hire more people. And you see how the cycle goes: hire more people, you have that social and economic impact, and it goes on and on, and this is all a positive thing. Now when the private credit markets, you know, if that should dry up, which I doubt it, but if, let's say, for argument's sake, let's play devil's advocate, let's say that was to happen, you would have a multitude of companies that will have their hands tied, and you have a lot of companies that will go out of business. So the private credit markets are a necessary evil. They're a profitable, you know, platform for, you know, Goldman Sachs, BlackRock, Blackstone, this, that, you know, all these firms, because of, you know, look, let them make their money, right? They're getting a higher yield. It's not, you know, maybe it's along the lines of junk bonds a little bit, but they're getting a high yield, and they're just lending on a bigger scale. It's like that the company got one big credit card, one big, you know, lump sum of money, unless it's tranched out, whatever it is. But at the end of the day, the company winds up getting the resources they need to grow. And if they grow, they're paying back the creditor, and the creditor is going and taking that and lending it out to another company, and so on and so forth. And it's a beautiful machine as long as it's running well. The time that it doesn't run well is when companies start to default. And that's when things get a little scary. And I hope that we don't get there. You know, the war in Iran, and the resources that are happening there, you know, I hope that this is not going to be a long-winded situation and things just simmer down very quickly, because, you know, this is when things are going to go awry. You're going to have gas prices going through the roof. You're going to have everything, food, everything's going to increase. You're going to have inflation up the kazoo. The income that people are getting are not going to be in line with that, and then you got the federal government that's going to have to do something, and the Federal Reserve that's going to have to do something. All right, and then the cycle begins again. And this is how you evade, you know, a depression. You can have a recession, you recede a little bit, then you bounce back, but you go into a depression, that's not months, that's years. Okay, so hopefully things work out for the better there, so that we don't have that issue. But anyway, I wanted to take this show and just go over that a little bit. It was just on my mind, and I apologize if it wasn't what you wanted to hear on the show today. on this episode anyway, but I wanted to touch on that because I do think, as anyone that is an investor or anyone that's in the markets, you have to understand how these things operate, you know, because it may help you in making a decision. If you see that, you know, the private credit markets are tightening up and things are happening like that, you may not want to invest in a retail company because they, or if credit starts tightening up in general, you know, you may want to look at these things because it'll help you to assess things a little better. All right, but that's my view on it. Again, not investment advice, just information that I think could be helpful. Okay, if it wasn't, I apologize for wasting your time, but I think that, you know, it can be insightful. You know, something to look into, something to further, you know, to further your knowledge base. You know, again, I'm not an economist, but I do have an understanding of how the credit markets work and how all this stuff does operate to make a well-oiled machine. Because at the end of the day, if you have a company that has no access to credit, that means that if they're making clothes and everything, they need credit to go get the material and shipping and everything else. If they don't have access to this, chances are they're going to start laying off and they can go out of business because you need the credit. You need the credit. You need the credit in order to do these things. This is why the private credit players are important. People call them vultures. People call them everything. The point of the matter is they're a necessary evil. It's a business. You can say the same thing about credit card companies. American Express, you know, Capital One, everything else, they make a lot of money off of the individuals on a smaller level, right? You know, so the private credit markets aren't as bad as that, believe it or not. You know, because if they're getting, you know, they have, you know, loans out there, 7%, 8%, 9%, that's a lot different than 27% or 30% or 35%. I mean, that's borderline usury. That's a story for another day. Anyway, I want to thank you guys for tolerating, you know, this rant on private credit and credit markets and all this other stuff that I was talking about, and I hope I didn't confuse you. Again, something I thought that was worth speaking about for me to do two shows today. Anyway, thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll be back with you for another episode of Money Never Sleeps.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
You're listening to UCW Radio in your face.
What is your major malfunction?
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on Money Never Sleeps Radio are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial advice. The host Louis Belathkath and guests of Money Never Sleeps Radio are not licensed financial advisors, and any investment decisions made based on information presented in this podcast are at the listener's own risk. Listeners are encouraged to consult with a qualified financial advisor or investment professional before making any investment decisions. The podcast hosts and guests do not endorse or recommend any specific investment strategies or products. All investments involve risk, and past performance is not indicative of future results.